And we're recording this, and in about 5 days, we're going to put it on boardoptions.com so you can download it as well as other previous programs that we've done. And I want to thank you for participating. And I want to introduce our moderator for this program, Ellen Ridstone. I've got something formal written about Ellen, but just let me just say this. If you're a CFO in the greater Boston metropolitan area and you don't know of Ellen Ridstone, you've been hiding under a rug. If you are a board member of a public company in the greater Boston area and you haven't heard of Ellen Ridstone, I got to ask, where have you been? Ellen is a commanding figure in business in our region. Now I'll read the formal things. She's a former CEO, Fortune 500 CFO, Fortune 500 treasurer, director of public and private companies. Indeed, recently, one of Ellen's public companies completed a successful strategic sale. So she's got an opening for a public company if any of you are looking. Ellen has a list of her experience that's too long for me to read, but if it has anything to do with technology, that's a good fit for Ellen. Ellen was named to the top 100 board diversity candidates by a magazine called Agenda, which is owned by the Financial Times. Ellen has been elected to the board of directors of the National Association of Corporate Directors, NACD of New England. And I believe Ellen recently got certified for something in governance by
I'm a board leadership fellow for years, and I recently went through the certification process. So yes. And I sit on the board and I chair programming for NACD New England.
And I guess, that's impressive, but what really impresses me that Ellen has not been a CFO really for a number of years. Nevertheless, in 2023, her former CFO colleagues honored Ellen with the Gorham F. Brigham Lifetime Achievement Award, which I think is really, really special and says something about the esteem in which Ellen is heard. So we're delighted to have you with us. Thank you, Ellen.
Larry, can I just ask, we have Reed AI on meeting. Phil, is that your AI? Is
It's
that
not me. I don't know who's doing that.
I know Phil had it before, so I didn't know if it was.
Who put the AI in?
It's automatic.
All right.
I can't control it.
I don't know why you can't control it, but in the future, if you could find out how to uncontrol it, because it's bothersome.
I have to unsubscribe to the Zoom feature.
Okay.
So I think the host can go in and remove it.
No, there were several times when AI requested to get on and I said no, and then it still got on.
Oh.
But I think it raises issues about confidentiality, and it's just not appropriate. Let's go around the room. Room one is Doug, Maggie, Mary Ellen, and Susan. Do you have a
Larry, would you like me to repose the question everyone should be answering? Because in our group, there was some question as to what the real question was. Would that help?
Well, let's just go around the room. What was okay. The reaction to the case? It's not. I don't think it's so much the question, but what would you do as a board member? So group one, Doug, Maggie, Mary Ellen, Susan.
Doug, self-elected reporting. I got out of it the last two times. And Maggie, Susan, and Mary Ellen all said, hey, we're number one. We'll be first. Lead with the best answers. So four questions we asked up front. We were confused as to, is the executive team presenting what's needed to the board for them to make decisions? Why is there such indecision happening? Or is the chair not effectively managing agenda and process? Unanswered questions sitting out there. To answer some of the very specific questions you asked, relative to committees, We think there may not be enough people to staff the committees they have. So either you need to add some board members with maybe some more technical skills or condense committees. We thought you could really live very nicely with audit comp and governance, perhaps adding a tech committee and then ditching the exec committee, give risk to audit and consolidate underneath all three of those. And making sure that the board members have the direction and understanding of what the committee function is, to both address, understand, have the technical depth, and then make recommendations back to the whole. Okay. So I think I'll leave it at that and not steal everybody else's thunder.
All right.
Unless my group thinks I missed a big one.
Okay. Room two is Greg, Ed, Ingrid, and Ken.
Hi, everyone. As the newbie, they said whoever wants to be spokesman, take one step forward, and they each took one step back. So that's sort of how I won the job. We had a great and spirited conversation, which was very helpful to me. We saw this as a governance issue, and we saw it as sort of like creating some priorities. We believe that things like, you know, strategy as a committee might not be as needed as a standalone committee, like was just reported out. We thought maybe just the three main committees, but the point we were we lived with was that in a sense, as the first line says on Ellen's case, everyone wants to be involved in everything. You know, I live that, Larry. You know the firm that I'm on the board of, and we have a governance committee, we have an audit committee, yet everybody wants to be involved in everything. And you know, there's a lack of discipline when you have that. And you know, the line that we shared was, you know, that everyone has an opinion, but not everyone wants to do the work. So if the culture of the board is that the committees engage in the work and they provide timely reports to the full board, where a full board discussion can then ensue, then I think, you know, you get closer to having some discipline over board behavior. We're wondering whether we also talked about whether the size of the board needed to be changed. We also talked about perhaps whether the board should meet more frequently. I think we came away with that if you've got a well-diversified board, and maybe one weakness might be of the seven people, some of them are somewhat of the same, and maybe the board lacks someone with deep technical knowledge to deal with things like, you know, the software and the connection to the Internet of Things, et cetera. But it all came down to governance, priorities, and some discipline. And last but not least, perhaps our board chairman needs to put his big boy pants on, and if he can't administer to the governance of the full board itself, perhaps he might need some coaching as well.
Great job, Ken.
Thank you very much. Next room is Barry, Ellen, and Steve.
Okay. We had basically 4 points, and I'll lead off with number four, not number one. Number four was, we said, in any case, this it would be wise, given these situations, to do a little off-site to talk about the role of the board and how they're functioning as a team. And Larry didn't pay me to say this, but that they asked Larry to moderate that rather than the board chair to have a truly open discussion about how the board functions without having to address.
Barry, the check is in the mail. Look for it.
Thank you. Okay, going back to the questions. First of all, what the chair needs, what information they need. They need to, I think we unanimously agreed on that, talk to the board, other board members, and find out how they feel about this. The board chair seems dissatisfied and frustrated, but we have to find, maybe they're very happy. Maybe they might say to the board chair, you're not doing a good enough job of keeping us focused. So, instead of pointing the finger at the other board members, they might want to, you know, the board chair might want to listen and find out how the others feel about it in devising a solution. Secondly, and I only have one other point, a third point, but secondly,
I think those concerns of being involved in everything, although is actually legitimate. Everybody does want, you just need a system for filtering it and a process. Everybody in the U.S. Senate gets to vote on everything, or the House, but you're only on the, if you're lucky in the House, you're on the Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Science and Technology, for example, where I spent some time, you know, very narrow, but everyone, so they may pre-chew, pre-digest things, but eventually, and third, and this was where my, my colleague, I'm trying to find your name again. I'm sorry, I apologize. Was just with me on the committee. Ellen, where are you?
Ellen.
No, Ellen and, oh, and Stephen, my colleague Stephen was very.
Ellen.
Yes, Stephen, thank you. I'm sorry, but my colleague Stephen was very explicit about they need individual subcommittees, both the ones by law and ones that they design as being right for the times. So I'm not sure I agree with the ones they have right now, technology and strategy and so forth, but they can figure out what ones are more relevant to operational and business and operations and which to overall strategy. So I would not separate, for example, strategy from technology roadmaps. But in any case, what Stephen's comment was they need to have committees that, and here we use, I'll use Ken's comment to all of us earlier about discipline, have a culture of self-discipline. The subcommittees meet, the subcommittees input into the overall committee, the committee of the board, and whether by written comment or just a 5-minute summary, and then they put the issues and focus that little part of the discussion. And I would add, they should be compensated for the role of being the head of a subcommittee and for and everybody who attends a subcommittee meeting for the subcommittee. Take that role seriously, take the structure seriously. And I think that would be it. But suggestion number four, as I say, is first do the 1 and 4 were do a little asking around, and then do then you may have, even at a meeting like that, the chair could say, well, here's my thoughts that I've come to but about having subcommittee, but let me see what you guys think. Or hopefully with Larry moderating to keep them all well-behaved.
Thank you, Barry. Next group is Amita, Chris, and Susan.
For us, we saw, and I'm speaking for the group, we saw the issues there being that the board seems to be a little bit confused as to the role of the board. We think they're doing too much of what the management team should be doing. So that we felt was a big issue. The other thing is they talk about having a strategy committee. We don't see any discussion of a strategic plan, which is so essential. And we're not sure if you really need a strategy committee. The board should be serving as, the board as a whole should be looking at the strategy, working with the management team, which presents a plan. It was also not clear to us, somebody mentioned this earlier, in terms of the expertise or lack of expertise in certain areas on the board. Although there are several CEOs in there who should be able to ask the right business questions, even about the different technologies. And so we felt that in terms of steps they should take, one of the most important things would be a board evaluation. In terms of not only the governance structure, but also the skills on the board. The proxy statement, because they are a public company, will talk about their expertise, but it's not clear if it's really their core expertise or they have just listed it as such. There needs to be a clear understanding of what the expertise is, where are the gaps within the management team, because we also need to clarify that this is what the board would be doing going forward. And if the CEO is lacking that expertise in the management team, the board will help you make sure that there are resources you can get, whether as part of the team, a management team, or consultants or whatever, but the board isn't necessarily going to function in that role. And then making sure that there's alignment with the strategic plan. And at that point, either refresh the board, or add additional members, or do board education. There are programs through, whether through NACD or through other consulting firms as such, to add expertise in areas that they may be lacking. those were some of the things. Susan, Chris, anything else you want to add?
Okay. Next group is Cynthia, George, Melissa, and Robert.
Okay. This is George. I'm going to be the spokesperson for our group. So similar to some of the comments already made, I've got maybe four main points. Two at sort of our high level view is that there's too much fingers in rather than noses in, fingers out. We've got a lot of people here who it seems are still, you know, want to be too involved in day-to-day decision making. And the fact that everybody wants to be on every committee, we felt several of us brought up that there may be trust issues among the board members that, you know, they don't trust that if they're not on a committee that they can rely on their colleagues who are on that committee, be it the strategy or audit or non-gov, whatever. There's no reason to have six committees with a seven-member board if every committee is going to be a committee of the whole and, you know, you've got everybody doing everything. It's not efficient. It's not an effective way to use your skills. So then focusing on those points, we said there are probably too many committees. They should trim them down, that they probably have too many CEOs on the board who still you know, want to be calling the shots. We didn't get into what committees should be eliminated, but maybe strategy and executive, you know, are things that can be done at the board level. Maybe limit each committee to three or four board members and, you know, divide it up. And we spent a lot of time saying they probably need, and maybe with the help of a consultant, to do a skills inventory of the board members. And, you know, allocate members to committees, ID what skill they're overweight in some skills, like product. They've got five and seven people, you know, all come from the same industry or some aspect of it. And they're underweight on other areas. They say that they've, you know, that the financing of the company, the capital structure is important. There's no investment banker type background. They've got a CFO, but you know, they only have one person. So, and that all might help them to, you know, look at the current makeup of the board and say, we really need to refresh, look forward. What is the company going to need 5-10 years out? What are the skill sets we should have now? How do we get the right people? And then go through the difficult process of having some people leave and creating a new board that's much more focused and has kind of a business model of how they're going to conduct themselves.
Good. Thank you very much. Next group is John, Maria, Marianne, and Phil.
Next, Marianne, so spokesperson for today. Some great input from everybody. We had a very robust conversation. I really enjoyed it. And we made some of the same observations that others did, but we really started off diagnosing why is this so complex and problematic, and got to the trust issue that's been mentioned, that could be underlying it, or the alternative, if that wasn't the case, just the process and structure is so bad, that how information is moving between the board and the committees and back doesn't make sense. So we had some suggestions about how they can improve that. We thought they were lacked some of the skills that they needed and suggested an interim step might be to add some advisors with the idea that these non-board members could be part of the committee and bring expertise, and that could also lead to a recruiting vehicle for future board members. Way too many committees. We thought that there should be three to four people on a committee max, and nobody should be on more than two. And you couldn't do that with this. Some of the topics the committees had, we really thought were a board committee and shouldn't be delegated out to should the overall board, not out to a committee. So I think from there, suggested that maybe they also implement some term limits so that they don't get stuck with this structure automatically and have a chance to keep rethinking it, and really should get some outside expertise to help them look at how the whole board is being managed.
Thank you very much. And the last group is John, Karen, and Piper.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Piper Davis. I'm the group spokesperson, although I think we covered all the ground with everyone else's brilliance, the advantage perhaps of going last. But we start with three main questions. One was about, you know, are these really board level issues and what's going on with the executive team that seems absent in this, and feeling like there needs to be prioritization and phasing so that the execs could report to the board and shape things so that the board didn't feel like it needed to be in the weeds, which is what seems to be happening. So that was one question, what's going on with the board executive team? Two, question about board culture and trust, like someone raised that, why is everyone feeling, whatever the words were, that it's critical for them to be on every committee? Is there some trust issue? Was there a breach of trust? Did the chair lose their trust? Was there something bad that happened that they all got in a bind? What is driving them to all feel like they've got to be in that position? And then third, board practices. What are their practices? What are their bylaws? What are their term limits? All of those kind of things. So our recommendations were that, yes, they should have fewer committees. We thought there should be a strategy committee, although I think Amita's point about strategic plan and that not a separate committee is a good one. But we felt like tech and risk should be folded into either strategic or finance. We didn't think there should be an executive committee on such a small board because everyone's going to want to sit on it. And we figured the chair and the CEO would kind of be on every committee or go to every committee meeting and have that continuity, and that everybody else needs to just kind of hold the line and have some discipline and listen to really clear reporting back that happens in the board meetings. We agreed about a skills matrix and thinking there might be a gap in terms of tech expertise. And definitely there were some overall questions just about the kind of strategy issues, the capital structure issues that made us wonder kind of what's the history of this company since it went public, and where is the what's the strategic direction? So those are our questions. It was interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've covered all the groups. So I want to turn the group to Ellen. Ellen, what's your reaction to the reactions that you got?
Well, I think these were great comments. They were really great comments. So let me try and set the stage from a different angle, because I think many of you ended up exactly where what I was trying to get to. This has nothing to do with the executive team. The information that flows to the board is fine. The information received is fine. It has nothing to do with the executive, the operating guys. This is a governance leadership board issue, right? It's and a couple of the different groups said that in different ways. It is about the board culture, the board structure. How is it led? What are the decisions, the process that are used? And how do you work going forward? That's what this whole case is actually focused on. The points that I loved, and I just took some notes as people talked about, was I love the points about, there's a lot of assumptions in this case. You've got the mind, the questions are all coming from the mind of the chair. Has he gotten input from the rest of the board members? Do they feel the same way he does? We don't know. Two, has there been somebody who sat down with the board, and usually this happens when the company goes public, but they clearly need a refresh, that says, which committees do we have? How do they function? What is the process? What is the communication between those committees and the full board reporting out? And to have a very clear, defined process. That came out with at least four groups, if not five groups. It's clear that needs to be, if it already exists, it needs to, the board needs to go through it again, right? Because everybody can't be involved in everything. So when you're going through that, what committees are really necessary? Well, you know, legally, you need to have audit, non-gov, and comp. So those are always going to exist. It is frequent that there is, if it's a real hardcore tech company or if it's a pharmaceutical company, there's often a committee of the board that sort of gets into the technical side of things. And asks the oversight questions, and they're oversight questions. We're not talking about running the company, they're oversight. And that I've seen it, I'm on my second pharmaceutical board. It's, you know, I've seen that on, you know, regulatory, highly regulated industries, you'll find a regulatory committee. So I've seen on a couple of my high tech boards, you have somebody, you have people from the board who can just ask the sort of oversight questions in detail. But what's clear is that you want the minimum number of committees that are needed in order for the board to do its job of, you know, duty of care and duty of oversight, duty of loyalty and duty of oversight, right? So figure that out. There needs to be a couple suggestions for to have a board offsite. There needs to be, however it's done, there needs to be good, clear communication. The one thing that is clear from my board experience, again, my board experience, is I would never put strategy in a committee. Every time I've seen a board try and put strategy into a committee, it's like, you know, if you look at the three big things that the board is responsible for, the oversight of the CEO, hiring and firing of the CEO, the strategy of the company, and ensuring there are sufficient resources to enact the strategy and the plan, right? And those are really, if you're going to cut to three key elements, and then everything else sort of falls out of them. And this is, I'm talking about public companies. That's this conversation here. So the strategy, I would never, every time I've seen strategy try and go into a subcommittee, it just fails. It just fails for all the reasons we've talked about. I love the comments that were made, which are very appropriate, about do an evaluation get the input from all the board members, do an evaluation of each of the board members. Let's figure out what skill sets we need now and what we need over the next 5 to 6 years. And do we have the right mix? Have a clear communication and process in place. I love the comments about board education because it is continuation. And I think the question that came up at least three times, which was a very important question, is this in the board chair's mind and nobody else has an issue? Or is there some sort of a trust issue or a culture issue between board members? And I'd say we don't know. And I can give you five different answers. But this is a case. And, you know, the only people who really know are the people sitting in that room. And you may find out if there are seven board members, you may have seven different opinions, right? But it is clearly a case about board leadership and board governance. And that was what we were trying to get here. So congrats to everybody. You guys did a great job with it. So thank you.
Ellen, I wonder if one of the issues, the issue that everyone wants to have their finger or their nose in everything, partially trust, but could it be that because they seem to be lacking expertise in certain areas, that nobody feels that there's an expert in the room, so they all feel like they might be an expert, and therefore better not have that conversation without me? Could that be one of the root causes?
You know, since I wrote the case, but what I was trying to get, you're right, it could be, right? You could have that situation. But where I was coming from on this particular case was the fact that there was not a defined process. So people felt like if they weren't in the room, they didn't know what had happened. So there wasn't good reporting out process. So we're back to the process and discipline, right? I mean, when I chair three audit committees. And when I do my report out to the full board, I am very systematic about what are the things that every board member needs to understand that came that was discussed in that audit committee and everybody needs to hear. The chair of comp on all my boards does the same thing. The chair of nomgov does the same thing. So, and you know, the only one of my public companies that has an extra committee, well, one is the pharmaceutical company has a specific regulatory and technology company. And then one of my boards does a lot of M&A. And so we will be looking at 20 deals at a time. And so we have a committee of the board that sort of looks at that. And then if anything turns serious, then it goes to the full board, right? So it's sort of, again, but there's full and clear reporting out for all key items. And that's what I was really trying to get at. You could have the issue, Chris, that you mentioned, but that's not what I was trying to get to.
Ellen, any other comments, reactions to the case?
I was just going to supplement what Ellen was describing in terms of additional committees. So I serve on a bank board. It's normal for banks and other financial services companies to have a risk committee.
Right.
I felt strongly in this case that this organization really didn't need a risk committee. So just wanted to mention that as well. And one other thing that we talked about in our group that I thought was really interesting, because one of the questions raised was, how do you engage the board? And I think that's an important question. You know, Ellen, there was a governance review, but it wasn't clear whether there had been then a conversation between the governance expert and the board to really engage in a conversation, not just individually, but as a group. So I thought that was an interesting opportunity as well.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think that came out. I think your point, Susan, is very valid. And I think it came out a couple different ways with there needs to be more board discussion between the board members on the governance, on the process, on the discipline, how they're functioning. So it's clearly needed.
Robert Johnson.
Thanks. Ellen, can you comment on just the number of board members? It looks, it was difficult for me to determine, was there, how many were independent, but seven seemed a bit meager given some of what they were trying to accomplish. Can you talk to that, please?
Sure. So seven independent, they're all independent, except for the CEO. Okay. So they're all independent except for the CEO. So they meet those tests. I guess your question about the number. So it's very interesting to me. But, you know, when I go back 21 years ago, when I first started sitting on public boards, and my first one was a Fortune 500, American Power Conversion. And, you know, we had seven members, seven independents plus the CEO, and the norm was like 9 to 11 for that size company. What has happened over time is that board sizes have actually shrunk. So the largest boards in general, and I mean, you know, there's always a difference, but you know, call it 7 to 9 or, you know, type of independence. Depends on the size company. It depends on the complexity. It depends on, you know, a lot of things. I have two of my public boards only have 5 independent directors and the CEO. And then my large cap board we have 7, but that includes, by the way, that includes PE firm that has invested, you know, like $500 million into the company. So they have a seat on the board. But
so Ellen, let me go into the implications of what you just said. I remember several years ago there was a number that was around that, you know, if you're on a board of a public company, expect 150 hours a year of work. Then if you're on the audit committee, another 150 hours a year. So could be 150 to 300 hours a year. Has that number changed?
No, it's completely changed. It's now the standard number that is quoted by NACD is 280 hours a year. Plus, if you're chair of a committee.
Plus, right.
Right. So now, if you sit on three different public company boards, and, you know, some of that is going to be education and staying fresh and so forth. So, but, it, you know, some of it you'll get leveraging. But still, the number of hours has come up. The number of board members of public companies has shrunk in terms of the size of the boards. The number of public boards has shrunk, and the amount of work has gone up as new items, regulatory, required regulatory, as well as subject matter, has been brought into the boardroom. So yes, Larry, it's a 280 is what the NACD quotes before you even add on, you know, sort of the chair work.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions for Ellen before we conclude the meeting? Yeah. Well, thank you very
much. Not a question, but I was going to make a comment if you.
Hi, George.
Hi, Ellen. You know, just talking about numbers, hours, and stuff like that, the heart of what you're saying, as I think, is if you've got a group of seven people, how do you leverage them to do the job? You know, and part of that is, you know, how many of them are going to be on any given one committee? So my group said three or four that are going to focus on, you know, the audit issues or comp or nomgov, and that they're going to bring back solutions and reports to the full board. And that frees up all those other people who aren't on those committees to do other things. And then a board like this, maybe can, the seven of them can spend more time on strategy, you know, as a board project, not, you know, a board discussion, that this doesn't need to be a strategy committee, as one of the other people reporting out said, because that's the job of the board of a public company, is to keep their eye on the strategy. So, you know, if everybody's on every committee, you're either going to be not spending enough time on each of these issues, or you're going to burn people out. And so maybe seven is enough. Maybe they do need more, but a lot of it depends on how you use the time that those seven people can contribute.
Right. And I think one of the things that you find out is more isn't necessarily better. So it comes down to the structure and process and culture, and are you asking the right questions? Do you ever have the right skill mix? There were comments about the evaluations and the skill mix, and do you have what you need on the board, and are you leveraging them correctly? And are you communicating, and do you have the right culture? Those are exactly the right questions that should be asked. So thank you guys for raising those issues, because that's exactly what this case was about.
In the time we have left, I'd just like to open a discussion. Is there anything in terms of ideas, leads, use the resources and the knowledge in this room to help you do a better job of what you're doing? Does anybody have any questions, comments, concerns, or want referrals to anything? Susan, your hand is up.
It is. One of my boards, we are working hard on refreshment. And there was a comment made from one of the groups that there should be term limits for this particular board. My understanding is that only about 8% of the Fortune 500 companies actually have term limits. I would love to hear how people handle refreshment. Personally, I think the most effective way, but the most difficult way, is to have a rigorous evaluation of how the board is operating and the individual members. But that's hard from a culture perspective. So I'm interested in what others have found to be successful.
I can answer, but I'd like other people to go first.
I can count. I actually had a an outside director Zoom call today on this very subject. And what we came out with is a privately held company, so a little bit different. But the idea is that we would have standard 2-3 year terms, and then you'd have a term limit. But with a supermajority of the closely held company, they could extend the person one more term, and that would be it. So 6 years would be the norm, and 9 and if somebody really was a key contributor.
So the norm, if I could, the norm is that, and the best practice is that people are elected, the board members are elected every year, right? I mean, you get really dinged by the large proxies. This, again, public company. Solicitors, if you have more. Now, it happens I've got a couple companies that have grandfathered in, you know, cycles of 3 years, and they dates back forever. And they're getting dinged every year, although the votes still come in. But the best practice is every year, everybody. In terms of board refreshment, all of my companies bring in an outside, actually bring in an outside service. It used to be and Susan, if you want, I could give you a couple of the questionnaires that are used if we want to follow up afterwards. There are some great questionnaires, and my large cap company brings in an outside person, does a very detailed individual assessment, individual evaluation with feedback, and then discussion at the non-gov committee and then with the full board every 3 years. And then on alternating years, each board member is expected to fill out an evaluation, and you're evaluating yourself and you're evaluating each of your peers against the set of criteria that was established again, you know, in year one, if you will. And out of that comes some interesting discussions. And the most of them end up being, is everyone pulling their weight? Do we have the right skill mix? Do we need something different? And it gets the questions raised.
I can say that we've had a client situation where it was a dysfunctional board, and the board made a decision to do board of directors self-evaluation. 1 year, just the committees. 1 year, just the board as a totality. And then 1 year, each individual member. Mm-hmm. Once the board committed to a process of board self-evaluation, we recommended a six-month gap between the commitment and the start of the program. And what happened in that 6 months is all of the dysfunctional board members elected to resign.
Great.
We had a party to celebrate them. They got little gifts. By the time we actually did the board self-evaluation, the reasons for having the board self-evaluation were gone. It was the first time in my career we'd ever accomplished our mission before we started.
Larry, that is phenomenal. But you know what's interesting? I mean, even in a couple of my boards that are so incredibly well run, there are still nuances that come out in those things. So you don't, it doesn't necessarily say, oh, Joe is a terrible guy and you got to get rid of him. But it could be, we need to spend more time on this, or we got some people who just speak too much, you know. Somebody who thinks they're an expert and they really aren't. We like to hear them, but could he, you know? So there's always the nuances. It doesn't mean you've got bad board members. So I mean, to me, doing these every year is actually very productive, even if we're into the nuances, because it's continuous improvement, right?
And some of the way that we've done them, Ellen, is when we do them with the individual self-evaluation, is to do it anonymously and then put together the data and meet with each of the board members. They can see where they fit, but nobody can see anybody else's data.
Love
and
it.
Sometimes they then change their behavior. And one board member who was, as and now is a very skilled board member, everyone commented that this individual always brought their cell phone in and were on their cell phone. That person got the feedback and never brought their cell phone again into a board meeting. So people learn, and when they hear it, it's like, oh, yeah. And so they can change their behavior. So
I think the key is not making board self-evaluation an event that's very time consuming and builds up a lot of expectation, but make it a ongoing process, usually no more than 1 hour a year of time on this thing, and then an hour of feedback. That's it. Then next year we're going to do another, and then next year we're going to do another. But it's a process, not an event. Because what I find, if you build it up and make it a big deal and very time consuming, then the result is people get angry with the result and they don't sign up for it again. Small sips.
Yeah, no, and look, I serve on a UK board, and as many of you know, UK boards have very strict governance rules.
Yeah.
So that board went through an evaluation with a third party that was incredibly rigorous, focused on the strengths of individual board members, which was telling in and of itself, because if someone was not mentioned as having a strength anywhere, that was an indication. So, but I really appreciate everybody's input. Sure.
I want to thank everybody for their participation tonight. And I want to particularly thank Ellen for writing the case and then presenting it to you all. And we look forward to seeing you next month at Seat at the Table. So bye-bye, everybody.
Nice to see everyone.
Thank you, Ellen. It was great.
Thanks, Ellen. Thank you.
Okay, Larry, you got what you needed?
It was great. Okay. I went, yeah, this was it was perfect.